All State Affairs together. Today is the 19th. It's 8:30 a.m. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Keller?
Here.
Representative Vasquez?
Here.
Representative Grunberg? Representative Christ Tompkins?
Here.
Representative Talarico?
Excuse.
Representative Stutes?
Here.
Chair Lynn?
Excuse. Okay, what we have before us today, believe it or not, a slow start. It's probably more important than the state budget at some level, and might be more important than marijuana. In fact, it is. It has to do with state federalism, the state's position with the federal government and dealing with Article 5. And before I call the sponsor up here to make a presentation, Representative Vasquez, do you have a motion to clarify what versions we actually have in front of us for consideration?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to consider the version 29-LSO249/E, dated 2/19/15, and it's the CS for House Joint Resolution Number 14.
Right. And then the one that was brought to us that is under consideration, a companion bill, is House Concurrent Resolution Number 4, and that one is Version H. So, hope that's clarifying, and I see no objections, so we're going to press right on. Before you come up, I just want to say that I took the liberty of printing up a compendium for legislators, and it has to do with Article 5, and the person that wrote it, his name is Dr. Nadelson. He's a pretty well-known historian, constitutional historian, and it's very helpful as far as you putting a context and understanding on what Article 5 is all about. And I just commend it to you, and I think you'll find it a valuable reference in your office as Article 5 issues come up. If you would, come on up. Representative Hughes, and whoever you want to help us understand, and we'll go from there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I have my staff, Stuart, who will go over details, but I'm just going to open with a bit of an explanation, and this is really a way for us to take an actionable item against federal overreach. And with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to talk about the two resolutions in tandem, because it's really hard to talk about one without talking about the other. So thank you for that. First, I will tell you that my attention to this matter occurred when I was at a legislator leadership conference where someone was giving the history of the state legislators, state legislatures across the country. And mentioned that in the first 100 years of our nation, it was more prestigious to be a legislator than to be a member of Congress. And the room got very quiet. It was state legislators from all states, Republicans and Democrats. It got very quiet because it just seemed so strange, so odd to us. And the speaker went on to say, well, when you think about it, a lot of power resided in the states in those early days, as well as they controlled the purse strings. Mm-hmm. So a person would serve in Congress but quickly try to come back to serve in their state legislature. And I found that quite fascinating. And as I thought since that time, the Confederation, one of the reasons why they reconvened and put the Constitution together is because in the Articles of Confederation, the states retained a bit too much power. And so when they constructed the Constitution, part of that was to work out that balance between the federal and state government. But who among us at this point doesn't think that the federal government hasn't grown and hasn't maybe grown a bit too powerful, and that we find ourselves with the federal government in our affairs here in Alaska far too often? And it has come to the point in even this session where it seems like we are constantly up against barriers that limit our economic opportunities. And it was a real point of unity in our state, this session, around those matters, whether it's the road to Eisenbeck or opening ANWR or considerations of offshore drilling. We've come across the political spectrum together on those items. And so that is why I'm bringing this forward. This particular effort got my attention because it's very grassroots in nature. There is not any big names or money behind this. There's no fancy office buildings in the lower 48 behind this effort. It is citizens. It's Americans from different states, and one of those Americans is here today. And it concern about where that pendulum is right now between the state and federal government, and it's swung too far over by the federal government side. So just as a review, Article 5 was something that was in our is in our U.S. Constitution. It's never been implemented fully. But one of the things about these efforts, as each time there's been one, you can learn from the previous one that didn't get all the way through, and they keep getting better and better. And I think this one has really got some sideboards and things about it that actually, yes, if this is a baby step and it's a long shot, but this actually maybe could work. And one of the beauties of the actual counterman piece is that it is nonpartisan in nature. It is not conservative, it is not liberal, it is not left, it's not right, it's not Democrat, it's not Republican. It's really about restoring the balance between the state and federal government. So it would be a really excellent one for the Article 5 process to go all the way through. There have been attorneys on both sides of whenever there's an Article 5 effort where some attorneys say, yes, you can do this, and others say, no, you can't. But to be perfectly honest with you, we've never gotten the ball far enough down the field for it to be tested in court. And we did have the Department of Law, had the Attorney General look at this, and we do have someone online in that regard, and nothing glaring appeared. It seems like it, reading the Constitution, reading what we have, there's nothing that's off in here as far as being problematic. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. I also want to bring to your attention that this is a single issue, and there have been, I think there have been some opposition letters received from out of state concerned about the dismantling of the U.S. Constitution if we were to convene a convention. But this has very tight instructions and sideboards on it, and it would be a problem. So I just want you to rest assured that we wouldn't be unraveling what we know as our country if something like this were to go forward. Now, specifically the word counterman, the word that we are more familiar with it is similar in meaning is the word veto. So what this would do, if the U.S. Constitution were amended, it would give the states veto power over certain federal decisions. And it would be a very high bar for it to happen. If it were the final article at the bottom of the Constitution right now, it essentially is a mechanism that would require three-fifths of the states to agree on one item as not being in their best interest within an 18-month window. That 30 states agreeing on something in 18 months is not something that would happen very often. It would be very limited, and it would also be on issues of broad appeal. And so I just want to point that out. So what we have is we have the two pieces of legislation, and Stuart will go into those in greater detail, but the thinner one, the HJR 14, is the call to Congress for the convention, and then the HCR 4 is the instructions to the delegates and the precise structure for the convention to occur, including the language to the amendment itself, which Stuart will go over. Mr. Chair, if Stuart could give the details, unless you have any questions for me before he does.
That's fine, and we'll go right to Stuart. I just wanted to say that Mike Schechter from the Department of Law is online, and Mike, I have made reference to a book that is available online, but I have a copy here with your name on it, so you can know the context of it. But it's a State Initiation of Constitutional Amendments. It's a guide for lawyers and legislative drafters, and Just again, for the record, the author is Robert Nadelson. He's a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence, Independent Institute in Colorado. And I just wanted to say that I'm really delighted that the Department of Law is there, and thank you for asking. Go ahead, Stuart.
And actually, before Stuart begins, because he'll get in some of the details, I want to give you, because it's a bit of a numbers game, and it gets kind of confusing. So not even worrying about whether it's counterman or whatever someone were trying to amend the Constitution, just so you know how an Article 5, if you're not that familiar, because we have worked on them in the past, but you have to have, there's several numbers. First number is 34. You have to have 34 states call the convention. So that would be the thinner document, the HJR 14. You have to have 34 states pass a resolution like this and call the convention. Then the convention convenes. At least 26, which is the majority of states, have to show up. So you have 34 call, 26 to have a quorum and convene. And then at least 26 have to agree on the language and decide to send it forward for ratification. The next magic number is 38. 38 states have to ratify it. 34 call, 26 have to agree to send it for ratification, 38 ratify. And then, in this particular case, the amendment is the counterman, or the veto, the state veto power. Once that's in the Constitution, that mechanism requires three-fifths of the states, which is 30 states, to agree within an 18-month window. So a lot of numbers there, but it gets a little confusing, and so I just thought I would kind of lay those out, because as Stuart talks, he may mention some of those numbers, and I just wanted to let you know in a real simple bullet form what each of those numbers is.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair, can you repeat the number 30?
So 34 to call,
mm-hmm.
26 to convene and agree to send the amendment for ratification, 38 to ratify. And then in this particular amendment, it requires for three-fifths of the states, or 30 states, to agree on one item which is in their best interest. And at that point, when they agree, it makes whatever they're agreeing about null and void as far as the decision coming out of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Stuart, and then we'll see if we have more questions for the sponsor, you or you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the State Affairs Committee. Thank you for letting me testify before you today. My name is Stuart Krueger. I'm staff to Representative Shelley Hughes. So I'll just go through the changes that were made in the CS version E of House Joint Resolution 14. Just on that second whereas, starting in line 9 through 13, we amended it to read, whereas the state's right and duty to provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of natural resources for the maximum benefit of the people has been continually infringed on by various federal agencies. And this change is made to include a wider scope of instances of overreach by federal agencies and a reference to the powers and responsibilities of the state as provided in Article 8, Section 2 of Alaska's Constitution. Just to kind of widen the scope of that. And so for the HJR 14 specifically, Resolve 1 states that this resolution serves as Alaska's application to Congress to convene a single-issue countermand amendment convention. Resolve 2 directs Congress to convene the countermand amendment convention within 60 days of receiving the 34th call from the states. Resolve 3 establishes that this application is a continuing application to remain until at least two-thirds of the legislatures submit their application. Then, if there's any other questions, we also have Michael Schechter online, and then Mr. Mike Coons, a national director for the state of Alaska for a group called Citizens Initiatives, which has been an organization that's been working on this for decades, actually.
I'm going to go over the delegate.
Yeah, and if you'd like me to go to the delegate resolution, we can do that as well.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. That'd be fine.
So the HCR 4, the concurrent resolution, serves as the document that essentially binds the legislature and its delegates. It provides sidebars specifically dictating what your delegates can do. It also establishes a credential committee, a joint committee in the legislature to select those delegates. And if you'd like, I can go through the sectional analysis.
Let's see if there's any questions for the committee, from the committee. And I think instead of that, unless there's questions, you know, in that area, in a particular area, we'll not go there. We'll save that for a future hearing, because we're not going to act on the bill today. Did Representative Vasquez, did you have a question?
I think in a nutshell, and I would like to hear the section-by-section analysis, but in a nutshell, I'm looking at HCR 4. It basically provides for calling of a convention under Article 5 of the Constitution for the states to, quote, amend the United States Constitution and adopt a countermand amendment to authorize, and the following is very critical, it's in a nutshell what the idea is, to authorize the states upon a vote of three-fifths of the state legislatures to nullify and repeal a federal statute, executive order, judicial decision, regulatory decision by federal government agency or government mandate imposed on the states by law that adversely affects the interests of the states in order to properly exercise the state's constitutional authority to check federal power, preserve state sovereignty, and protect the rights of the states and the people. So in a nutshell, this is what these two documents do. It limits the power of the federal government. Historically, we have the power and the growth of the federal government has been immense over the last several decades, let alone the last 100 years. But in a nutshell, it empowers the states to take control over their future. One startling example that everybody knows is cited in the resolution number 14 in the first paragraph. The example given there, and everybody knows about this, at least those of us that live in Alaska, first page, first paragraph, is the federal government's recent denial, quote, the federal government's recent denial of and refusal to work with state officials on the construction of a life-saving road from King Cove to Cold Bay. In a nutshell, the federal government has denied the right of this town or village to have a life-saving road. When the weather conditions are bad, folks cannot get off to the airport. They cannot have somebody go to a hospital. It is very startling to see that the federal government would not approve a life-saving road. In my personal opinion, is it unconscionable? It is the stark example of federal overreach.
Thank you very much for putting on the record. And yes, there are stunning examples of the need for this. I know this is a little unusual because of the fact that we're putting this on the record and we're trying to get some testimony and we're coming back to it. You know, so I'm going to indulge myself and make a comment too.
I'm done, Mr. Chair. No, I just wanted to put on the record the example of the King Cove to Cold Bay Road, and I wanted to put on the record the essence of what these documents do.
Yeah.
And that allows the states to put limits on what the federal government is doing.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's very critical to have on the record in the context of this bill. The other thing I think that's critical and this is something I'm going to ask the sponsor to respond to, but the bar for getting this done seems so impossible. You know, 38 states to ratify. Okay, now what that means, there's a tendency, I think, looking at this historically, to feel a little bit hopeless when you think of that, you know, getting 38 states to agree on something like this. But what's happening is, because of examples like Representative Vasquez just brought up, and I'm going to add because of the budgeting debt that we have in the U.S., you know, it's just shocking and stunning. And at some point, you know, it's a tragedy. And it's a tragedy where partisanship is going to mean nothing. And 38 states may be very eager to jump on board. And that's why this is such an important thing to have in place to get started in talking about it. And I want to just say very clearly, this is not a partisan issue. It's whether or not we're going to stand up in the state or not. So We have Representative Vasquez has a previous appointment that she's going to step out to, and would you like to comment on that? Or?
Yes, and I would just say this. This was put in the Constitution for a check and balance purpose, and we really haven't had a way to implement it, and this mechanism would allow us to do it. It is a high bar, and that accountability that states would be pushing Congress toward is something that has been missing. And I just thought it would also be helpful to give an example of when this kind of thing might, you'd have the type of thing that might have, this mechanism might have been exercised had it been in place. I think of No Child Left Behind. That was under a Republican president, but there wasn't a state that was happy with it. It was not working. And I think in that case, you might have been able to get the 30 states, the three-fifths states, within an 18-month window to say this is not in our best interest. And so that is an example. And again, it's not partisan. I think whether we have Democrats or Republicans in power, that this would only be for those broad kind of issues that states have feel like the federal government has gone too far. And it's an important check and balance mechanism that is badly needed.
Thank you. Any other questions for the sponsor, or the sponsor's representative? Okay. If not, what we're going to do is go ahead and open up public testimony. We'll
invited
have,
testimony?
Oh, yeah, sure. Commissioner, I'm to a different world here. Representative Hughes. Go ahead. What do you say?
Yes, we have invited testimony here. Mike Coons, the
okay, great.
Who happens to be a constituent, but he's also one of those grassroots people from around the country. And he's stepped up, and he's the state director for the effort here, but he also was appointed as the national director, so we're fortunate to have him here. So thank you.
Great.
Chair.
Great. And those of us that have been around for a few years know Mike Coons' voice. I don't think we've had him here in the hot seat, so now's our chance to get even for all those hours. As you might know, I know Mike. Identify and tell us who you represent, and go ahead and give us your testimony.
Yes, Representative Keller, committee chair, committee members. My name is Mike Coons. I'm the National Director for Citizens Initiative. We are a nonpartisan grassroots effort. Our executive director is Charles Kapowitz. He's from North Carolina. We have our executive coordinators out of Georgia. We have another member of our board that is out of Texas. We got people in South Dakota, Washington State. We're all over, but we're maybe small, but we're making inroads. One of the things that I did want to kind of key in on, based on earlier the comments that have been made already, and I do want to thank Representative Shelley Hughes for taking this on. She's just been an absolute rock with this. Is the issue of 38 states to get this ratified? If you consider the fact that there are 38 energy producing states in this nation, from coal to oil to natural gas predominantly, those states have been impeded by the federal government for far too long. We have the recent situation in Keystone, where the President of the United States vetoed the Senate and the House to stop Keystone, who has now tried to, through Wilderness Act, to steal another 22 million acres of Alaska, my state, my land, our state, as Americans. So when we have 38 states that are already energy producing and all have felt the overreach of the United States federal government, that's just on that. Then you got EPA. Everything from Chesapeake Bay to some of the most blue states in the nation, Delaware, Maryland, that are being impacted by EPA, all the way to California and Oregon, my former home state of Oregon, with a worm, I think is what it was, that was causing the EPA there. From the Gulf to Beryl, the EPA has had huge impact on federal overreach. So I think once this is ratified, once we get this to that 34, And we're moving that quite well. We got it in North Dakota right now. We've got 9 states that are filing and that are going forward and going forward really well, that this is going to pass. And when we get that 34th, we're going to get that 38. And then, as an example, if I may, as an example, I would venture to say that within the first session, because this is going to be taking a learning, this is going to be a learning set, learning deal when it comes to the state legislators and what they're going to be able to do with this tool, and it's a huge tool. The one of the very first ones is going to be federal lands, the Wilderness Act, the Antiquities Act, all these things. Everything west of Mississippi is 50% of the state's average is federal lands. That one will pass 30 states. We can get west of Mississippi, except for California, maybe not Oregon, but we can also pick up the southern states as well. Then we have the anti-Second Amendment that has been going on to this nation for far too long. Through a simple resolution, which is the Countermand Amendment, we could repeal the 1968 Gun Control Act. We could repeal the 1934 NFA. We could repeal the Gun Child Safety Act, which makes adults that are over 18 into children because they can't hold own a handgun until they're 21, but yet they can join the military. So that one would be a big one. The No Child Left Behind would be a big one. Again, it's nonpartisan. Everybody's being impacted by it. EPA, I've mentioned that already. And lastly, and I've talked to several Democrat friends, Patriot Act. Patriot Act is something that a lot of, you know, both sides have got real First Amendment concerns about. So those are some of them of examples that could really easily be happened within the first session of this being, after this is ratified. And if I may, to give you a flavor of what a resolution would be like. Whereas the federal government passage of the 1968 Gun Control Act has violated the state's individual Second Amendment rights by regulating this enumerated right. Whereas the history of enforcement of the 1968 Gun Control Act by the U.S. Attorney Generals in conjunction with local and state law enforcement has not been enforced consistently, be it resolved that under Article 28 Countermand Amendment, the state of Alaska nullifies and repeals the 1968 Gun Control Act, all changes to the GCA, and all rules and regulations related thereof. Be it further resolved, the other states take up this resolution to protect their citizens' Second Amendment rights, and thus upon the 30th state resolution that the 1968 Gun Control Act is repealed. Be it further resolved that this resolution be transmitted to all their states for considerations. And one of the things, I'll leave you with this, because I'm running out of time, but under Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, it says no state shall, without Congress's approval, enter into a compact or an agreement. The beauty of this is that when the state of Alaska were to pass a resolution like that, we'd be transmitting this to other states. That is that we have transmittal, we have electronics, we have telephones, we have internet. All the states are all talking to each other anyway. So it's not a compact, it's not an agreement. It's those other states saying, wait a minute, Alaska's doing something that we really like. We really think, you know, we really think this is great. Senator, Representative Keller, I'm going to get him on the phones. What are you guys doing up in Alaska? You know, how is this, what can we do? You know, we like this. Well, can we use this? And they can do that and would not violate Article 1, Section 10. And I'm to entertain any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Okay. Would you one time repeat yourself? How many states are considering this at the moment?
Right now, we have upwards of 9 states that have filed.
9 states.
Okay. And then we're looking at right now we've got New Mexico has just filed the application process only, but the other ones are also filing both.
Right. Well, okay. Thank you, Representative Price Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Coons, when you say filed, I guess of the 9 states that you mentioned, which state is in the sort of most advanced stage of consideration?
North Dakota right now has passed out of the House. And they are in committee hearing as we speak in the Senate. And they'll be, they're hearing right now, and then they'll be hearing again at 3 p.m. Central Time on another committee. And we expect it to pass out by next week.
Follow up.
And all of these efforts were initiated in the 2015 sort of legislative season?
Chairman, Representative Christ Thompson. Yes, can you repeat the question again?
Of the nine states that mm-hmm. are in some stage of consideration mm-hmm. of these resolutions, were all of those efforts initiated during the 25 sort of legislative season or legislative session?
We started that in 2014, and we've been working it heavily. We've been working it very heavily in 2015, especially. We've had radio shows. We do teleconferences. Our executive director right now, he's 73 years old. He's driving around in a 26-foot motorhome. He has driven from North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, and he's back up to North Dakota, and then he's going to be heading on down to Kansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania is what we're hoping to, if we can maintain the money flow. Mm. So that's what we're actively working this.
Have you kept track at all, Mike, of how many Article 5 initiatives you've heard of and watched?
There's eight. Matter of fact, I would recommend to the committee to go to Article 5 Caucus. It's a really good website to go to. Run by Senator Lundberg out of Colorado. You have the Balanced Budget Amendment Task Force. You have the Convention of States. You have the Compact for America. There's one rule or one amendment. It's one of the newer ones. There's a WOFPAC that is starting out of California and I can't remember the other state, but that one has to do with Citizens United, or is it Citizens United, the court decision on First Amendment. There's a push on that through Article 5, and there's a few other ones that are kind of constantly kind of percolating up through. Yeah. But if I may, to follow up on that, on that question, though, is that we are the only one that has a delegate resolution that defines the convention, that defines the delegates as ambassadors to the state legislatures, that defines a pre-approved amendment from each state, and no other does that.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask one question of Mike. I don't mean to put Mike Schechter on the spot, but I'm going to anyway. I know him, so I know he's thought about this stuff. But the question is kind of real subjective, and you don't have to respond. But when the Founding Fathers put Article 5 in the U.S. Constitution, do you think that they intended it to be very difficult? Do you think they intended it to be used? I'm just curious. Mike, do you mind commenting on that, or do you have any other feedback that you'd like to give us from this discussion?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I think the Founding Fathers generally intended, so Article 5 contains both the regular amendment process, which has been used 27 times in 239 years, and the convention process. I think they intended that the Constitution be that, this overarching document that is amended carefully and rarely, and that most law will be derived from Congress as the legislative branch of government. So I don't know that they intended that the convention process never be used. It seems to at least be co-equal with the congressional institution of an amendment of the amendment process. I think the bigger question for us here at the Department of Law, there is an illustrious list of legal scholars and prominent supporters on both sides of the question of whether a constitutional convention can be limited to a single subject if one is called. And I think I am not personally a constitutional scholar, and the issue has never been something that the country has had to act upon, either through the courts or Congress. There's never been the quorum necessary to call for Congress to call a constitutional convention in the history of the country. So the caution we would have is we don't know. We really don't know the answer to how that question would be resolved. And I respect Representative Hughes and Mr. Coons, and that is an absolutely fair position that they believe the companion resolution setting up the sideboards for the delegation and the specific amendment to be considered in a convention, I think that's an absolutely valid legal theory. But the theory on the other side that once called, a convention creates its own rules and may consider whatever amendments it may choose to is also, I believe, an equally valid legal theory. And we can point to a lot of things on both sides. I think the fun that the trouble that folks have with lawyers from time to time, maybe all the time, that we can see both sides. And I think this is one issue in particular where, because we have not had one, and we have not had, the country has not had reason to make a determination one way or the other, that it is truly an area where we don't know.
Mike, if you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Oh, I apologize, Mr. Chairman. This is Mike Schechter. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Natural Resources Section in the Department of Law.
Right. Thank you. And thank you for pointing out that discussion, and I also want to make reference to the book that I will get you a copy of, but that is addressed from the perspective of the author there, Rob Nadelson, and you might find it very interesting. And as far as your comment on attorneys, I like to say if it wasn't for attorneys, we wouldn't need them, you know. And so, but after a while, you get a grudging appreciation for the fact that you can pick up both sides of the issue and get them out there for us to look at. So thank you, and thank you for taking time to call in.
Happy to do it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. With that, we're going to adjourn, and we'll bring this up at a future time. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman.